KSIV now presents Encounter, a public service program of Bot Radio Network, dedicated to keeping you informed about the issues that affect your life. Now, here's today's Encounter broadcast.
How has your mind changed about education as a result of what happened in COVID? What challenges did you face that you just hope some of the stimulus funds will help address in the education system? And are there ways that I can pay for my child's education in Missouri because I don't like what's happening in the public school system? These are our topics today on Encounter. I'm Judy Redlich. Susan Pendergrast is my guest. She is the Director of Research and Education Policy at Show Me Institute. Susan, welcome.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you for having me.
Susan, over the past year and a half, it's been a huge challenge for families who are trying to get their children educated well, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been such a challenge. Obviously, this year's been challenging in lots of ways, like no other, but certainly education is one area where we've seen this massive disruption in the way things have always been. And because the school buildings had to close, we underwent this big change where all of a sudden every parent almost in the country became a homeschooling parent, whether they wanted to or not. And it's really changed parents' thoughts and attitudes about how their children are educated. And we're seeing a lot of parents who now want to really change things up for their children. They're DIYing their kids' education. And I think going forward, we're just going to see a lot of demand for something other than I put my child on a bus in the morning, they go to the school that they have to go to based on where I live, and they come home in the afternoon. I think we're going to see a real change in the way education gets delivered.
Now, there's a new House bill, 349, it's called the Education Savings Account legislation that just passed. What is that all about?
That's correct, and this was pretty groundbreaking. I have to say that it is sitting on the governor's desk, and we are all hopeful that the governor will sign this legislation. He has not signed it yet, so he does have a pile of bills to sign, and I'm hoping that this one gets signed into law. And what this bill does is it creates a program whereby you or I can donate money to a scholarship-granting organization. And if I make a donation to a scholarship-granting organization, which could be like an archdiocese, nationally, these scholarship-granting organizations come in lots of different forms. If I make a donation to that, I get to take a 100% credit against my Missouri tax bill. And then parents of children either with disabilities and or low-income families can apply for a scholarship account through these scholarship-granting organizations. And the state or the organization will then put up to about $6,500 into an account for that child. And that child can then, rather than go to their assigned public school, use it either for private school tuition, including at religious private schools, or they could use it to join one of the sort of pop-up education hubs that's been happening where the Boys and Girls Clubs or the YMCAs or some churches have put together small learning communities for families. Or you could use it for tutoring or, you know, to supplement homeschooling. So it's very flexible in what parents could use it for. And for example, a parent of a student with a disability, you could use it for equipment or therapies. So it's very flexible in how you can spend it. And this will finally put parents in the driver's seat for how they can direct their child's education and not just the parents who can afford it, right? So this happens in multiple other states. It's a pretty cool system, generally driven now by like an app where you have sort of like a Venmo account and the money goes into your account. Then there's only approved providers where you can spend it. And, you know, this is a kind of Missouri catching up to what other states are doing and responding to what parents really want.
How many other states have such a program in place?
Missouri's particular flavor of this is an ESA or Education Scholarship Account funded by tax credits. That's kind of a new hybrid of these things, and only Kentucky and Missouri have that. But lots of other states have tax credit programs, and then other states have education scholarship programs. But the ESA is being flexible, the tax credits normally being just for private school tuition. But this blend of the two is now just Missouri and Kentucky, but nine states have ESA programs, lots of states have tax credit programs, and this year, probably partially at least because of the shutdown and the pandemic, 11 states have either passed or expanded their private school choice programs for parents. So I don't think we're going to turn the clock back to where it was 2 years ago. I think it's only going to grow.
Awesome. Susan Pendergrass is my guest. We're talking about what's happening in Missouri in our educational system as a result of COVID. So some good things have come out of the challenges we face, haven't it, Susan?
Some great things have come out of it. I mean, we've seen some, as many people say, necessity is the mother of invention. So we've seen these like cool ideas popping up where parents are getting together with other parents in the communities and children are meeting in someone's basement because other parents have to go to work during the day.
Yeah, how is that? Can parents do that? I mean, do you have to be licensed to do that? How does that work to meet in hubs?
Well, Missouri does have a very flexible homeschooling law. So essentially, it's under the homeschooling law. And at the Show Me Institute, we were prepared to sort of go to battle if they were going to start trying to regulate these situations. But these would be parents who have, you know, one parent has volunteered their home and the children go to that home and either do their online learning through their school system there in a safe place, or in some cases, parents have gotten together and hired a teacher to teach them in these small micro schools. Both are great ideas, I think.
Great ideas.
And then the other, you know, the karate academies and the Boys and Girls Clubs and these organizations that popped up because, you know, so many parents, particularly low-income parents, didn't have the option of working remotely. They had to go out the door in the morning, and our frontline workers and these people were left with a true dilemma of finding a safe place for their child to be, even to just do their virtual education. So luckily, the marketplace has kind of stepped up and found places where parents can send their children safely. And I think going forward, the state would be wise to help them financially keep these things going, because what I think is very interesting survey results that have come out of this is national surveys that are taken monthly by an organization in Indiana have found that parents, when you say after the pandemic is over, how many days a week do you want your child to be fully in person in school? And about half of parents say that they now would like to have their kids home 2 or 3 days a week. They sort of like this idea, you know, they don't necessarily want to homeschool full time, although 10% of parents now do. But only about 48% want them in school full time. The rest of parents sort of like the idea of having their kids home a couple days a week or hybrid homeschooling. So we'll see what happens for those people going forward. But, and I don't mean to throw out a bunch of numbers here, but we took a survey of Missouri parents specifically in December, and fully a quarter of them gave their child's remote experience a D or an F. So parents have not been happy this year. I'm sure you talk to parents. In
yes.
my line of work, my kids are grown, but every time I bump into a parent, I say, how's the school year going? How are your kids doing? And I've heard everything from, don't ask me because I'm going to cry if I answer, to, you know, I'm very frustrated because I thought I bought a house in a neighborhood that had a school system that would be great, and they've let me down this year. So generally speaking, parents want more, they want something different, and hopefully the school system will respond to that.
Dr. Susan Pendergrass is my guest, and she is the Director of Research and Education Policy at Show Me Institute. Now, we jumped right into this House Bill 349, but Susan, maybe people don't know what Show Me Institute is all about and some of the things they fight for those of us who live in Missouri.
So we are a think tank that promotes free market policies, but our goal is to increase and improve individual liberty and economic liberty for Missourians, and that includes education freedom, which means that I firmly believe that every child in this state should have at least two options when it comes to education, in the case that the one option that you happen to be assigned to based on where you live is not a good fit. And that happens for a lot of reasons. As you know, students get into and attend Harvard University and find out it's not a good fit. Not necessarily, you know, a judgment of a particular school, but for a lot of parents, the one thing they're offered isn't a good fit. And the states, quite frankly, that are beating the pants off Missouri educationally and leapfrogging over us to being a top state in the country when it comes to test scores are those that are offering parents' choices. And Florida comes to mind. There's half of Florida parents participate in a school choice program.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, Florida has really come up in the numbers, hasn't it, over the years because of their progressiveness.
Yeah, that's right. They're like top 10. Mm-hmm. Their fourth graders are like fourth and sixth on the nationally comparable tests. And so the states that are offering young parents lots of choices, I think you would agree that like young people want more choices, not fewer, with everything in life. And the states that offer more choices are those that are going to attract young families. Arizona is another one that offers a lot of choices. And Indiana, you know, a lot of choices for parents. So I have a daughter in Denver, and she and her husband don't yet have kids. But when they do, they won't have to move. They will go in, as every Denver parent does, and submit their top five choices. And it goes into a system.
A lottery system.
That's exactly right. Although if your neighborhood school is your first choice, then you automatically get it. So you get your neighborhood school. But every parent goes in and has to sort of learn about schools and make decisions about schools. And so for them to move somewhere where they have no choice would be very frustrating. And I don't think Missouri will attract parents and be sort of a destination for families until we recognize that we need to offer a variety of options for every child so that every child in Missouri can reach their full potential.
What about Illinois, Susan? Where do they stand in the ranking?
So Illinois has a tax credit scholarship program, a quite large one. It has a maximum scholarship pool of $100 million. Missouri's will be a max of $25 million to start. They also have a much broader charter school law insofar as they have them statewide. Missouri's are very limited. So, you know, Illinois has problems, of course, as a state. They have problems with the amount that they tax people and other things. But when it comes to education, they're ahead of Missouri. But we're, you know, I think we're poised to catch up if we continue on this path.
Awesome. Dr. Susan Pendergrast is my guest. She's the Director of Research and Education Policy at Show Me Institute. Have your eyes been opened to some of the things that could happen in Missouri? And what are happening nationally? Susan, would you join me for another segment of Encounter?
I would love to.
Awesome. I'm Judy Rudlick. We'll be right back to talk about more on education. Please stay tuned. If you've listened to me at any time at all, or you've been friends with me, you know that I love to help people tell their story. Another thing I enjoy doing is helping people find their highest potential. If you're in a life's rut and you just can't figure out how to get past your stuck place, a life coach like me could help. Let me walk with you through your journey of transition. I'm a Christian life coach, and to find out more about my coaching, go to my coaching page at judyredlick.com or email me at jredlickspeaks@gmail.com. I'm Judy Rudlick. Thanks for joining me again for Encounter. Dr. Susan Pendergrast is my guest. Education is our topic today. She's the Director of Research and Education Policy at Shelby Institute. We have been discussing this new House Bill 349. Susan, if you could give a couple sentences about that bill. And also, how is this bill going to affect the rural school systems?
Well, that's very interesting, and I'm really glad you asked, because there is this prevailing wisdom in Missouri that rural children don't need school choice, that rural children are perfectly well-suited, each and every one of them, by their public school, which I know is not true.
That is absolutely not true.
It is not true. I know that a third of our rural high schools don't even offer calculus. So unless you don't want to be an engineer and you're positive about that, I wouldn't say that every rural school is perfectly serving its kids.
And also, kids with disabilities in rural schools have a really hard time. I've done speaking at various places, and this is a major issue for parents who have kids with disabilities, not only in Missouri and Illinois, but all across the nation.
That's exactly right. And I don't mean to just keep bringing up Florida, but Florida has several school choice programs designed specifically with children with disabilities. And I could point you to examples of parents in rural areas who people don't realize how many rural areas there are in Florida, who have used their scholarship money to do exactly what I said, educational therapies and educational specialists and equipment, and they can do that there. And parents of students with disabilities in rural areas in Missouri do not have those options, and they are often not well served. But House Bill 349 in particular, in the House, it got exactly the number of votes it needed to pass, which is 82, so the narrowest of margins. But it did pass. And in order to make that happen, they essentially excluded rural children from participating. So this program will only allow scholarships for children in communities of 30,000 people or more, which is our larger communities. St. Louis and Kansas City certainly, but also Columbia, Springfield, and the larger communities. So they excluded that because I get very frustrated, in fact, with the idea that our rural legislators are dead set against school choice for their constituents, and they get a lot of pressure from those within, you know, what I would sort of call the status quo establishment to make sure that parents don't have any other options other than their assigned public school, because it kind of keeps them afloat. However, other states, you know, nationally, when it comes to charter schools, there's almost 1,000 rural charter schools in this country. They serve very small communities. There's lots of them that people love very much. There's a rural charter school in Kansas that converted from a traditional public school. It's agricultural focused. They have a waiting list. They have chickens, and like, it's a really cool place. There's one-room schoolhouses in rural Idaho.
Oh, there cool.
Right. There's rural charter schools in the Delta of Arkansas, very high-performing ones that specifically serve rural students. And so to say that rural students don't need school choice is incorrect. We also know that we have hundreds of rural private schools, and people act as though there's no private schools in rural Missouri, but there are. And the tuition at these is much lower than what people think of as the private fancy school tuition in the St. Louis and Kansas City areas. It's very affordable through churches, and parents could take advantage of that if rural parents were able to get these ESAs as well. So while I'm excited about it, and it is a start, we are excluding most of the state because Missouri, about half of our schools are in fact rural, and that,
rural areas.
That is sort of the heartbeat of Missouri, is our rural areas.
That's
and
right.
To keep them out of it is really unfortunate. So I'm hoping that it expands, and I hope that it goes statewide so that everybody can participate. Religious schools can be part of this program because of a Supreme Court a year ago in Montana, and that was a rural parent who wanted to use a scholarship account for her daughters to go to religious private school. And the Supreme Court finding has now sort of made that very possible. And even in Missouri, we have a constitutional amendment that people used to point to say that you couldn't do that, and now you can. So I think in rural areas, a lot of parents would be very interested in this option for their children, and unfortunately, it's not available yet. But it did pass, and that's a good thing. And then in the Senate, about the only thing that got negotiated was that in order for the program to be in place, the state has to contribute more towards all schools' transportation funding. And that's an issue that rural districts really press for because they have higher transportation.
Sure.
Because
issues.
Children are more dispersed. Right. So they got extra transportation funding, but I think it's way past time for our rural legislators to step up and acknowledge that they have families living in their districts who need another option. And I just hope when they see how happy families are when they do get these scholarships, they'll realize that they shouldn't be excluding certain children because every child deserves them.
Well, what about the stimulus funding that Missouri
right.
is getting? How so, do you recommend the state use it, and what's happening legislation-wise concerning that?
We've gotten so much money. The latest round was another $2 billion for education, and the State Department of Education gets to keep $200 million or 10% of that. There's a lot of flexibility. The first round of stimulus money, the CARES Act, had a special fund for governors that was designed for education flexibility. It was the GEER Fund, G-E-E-R. And Governor Parson got about $58 million.
Oh.
And, yeah, so in South Carolina, the governor used some of that money to create scholarship grants for children who were already attending private schools and needed to continue to be able to pay their tuition. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma did something similar. They were called SAFE grants. And Arizona, the governor used a portion of the His Gear funds to create a microgrant program for people who wanted to do what I was just mentioning, these small learning communities, micro schools, learning pods. There's a lot of different names for these education hubs. He took $1.5 million and created a microgrant program to keep those going. These great ideas to keep them going and to let parents continue to participate and see how successful these programs can be. Unfortunately, we did not see a similar use of GEARS funds in Missouri. They went towards transportation grant programs and some rural broadband connectivity. But there's a lot of money out there, and now is the time, I think, to take a portion of that stimulus funding and create a similar innovation grant program where people who have been educating kids for a year, right, they've been doing it, the Boys and Girls Club, let them apply for a grant to continue doing it. They've already brought in tutors. Let them apply for a grant to continue that program. And they could demonstrate their viability by simply letting somebody come in and observe what they've already been doing, or maybe fast-track them to be a charter school. But I think it's very important across all parts of life in this past year. We've learned lots of things. We've learned about telemedicine. We've learned about the need for going in person to take your barber's license exam. You don't need to do that anymore. So we've learned a lot of stuff. And I think it's important to take away the best things that came out of that. And that is particularly true in education. A lot of parents have discovered that their kids thrived in remote learning. Maybe they were being bullied, or maybe, you know, there was a number of reasons they didn't like going to school. So they want to continue in virtual learning, but not necessarily homeschool. And again, a lot of parents want to do this like 2 days on, 3 days off program because they like having their kids around and knowing mm-hmm. what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So I hope that we take the best ideas that we've learned and carry them forward and make them better so that we have more of a portfolio approach going forward, that all students can find a thing that works for them. That's so important. And that we don't just go back to, sorry, one size fits all again.
So, Susan, House Bill 349, the Education Savings Account legislation, where are we right there? It's real short, two-sentence summary. And what can parents do so the stimulus money is proactively spent well on education and not earmarked for something else?
House Bill 349, if it is not vetoed, if it's either signed or not signed, will go into law August 28th. At that point, citizens can begin making donations to scholarship granting organizations and taking a credit against your 2021 Missouri tax bill. It's important that we first fund the scholarships before we can start giving them out. So we do need to let everyone know that rather than sending their money to Jefferson City in May, they could send it to a scholarship granting organization in August, which would be great. And then the window, I'm guessing that the website where parents can begin to apply for scholarships won't be open until the following school year. The bill allows for up to 10 scholarship granting organizations to form. I suspect that those will form across the state. Other states have seen something similar. And then we can begin giving scholarships to children and parents can begin to apply. In terms of stimulus funds, I think we need a lot of oversight. There are literally billions of dollars flowing right now from the federal government, just billions and billions. And so I think it's imperative that we spend it wisely. And I've equated it to, like, normally your grandmother gives you $10 for Christmas and this year you got $1,000. Are you going to spend that in the smartest way? Probably not. So we need sort of a collective oversight over how that money gets spent. And parents should reach out to their legislators and ask what they're doing with the stimulus money and see how much of it is going to schools. And why not give it directly to parents? That's what I would recommend, that it go directly to parents in the form of these scholarships. In fact, what I think would be really cool is when this program goes into effect, the ESA program, it has a cap of $25 million in donations the first year. It'd be great if the state of Missouri gave that first $25 million. Like, they funded that program for a year before people become aware of the fact that they can give money to these scholarship granting organizations. I think it'd be great for the state to give seed money. $25 million in the scheme of what we're getting from the federal government isn't that much, and that would allow the program to get up and running really fast. So the Show Me Institute, we have a document on what we think, how some of the stimulus funds should be spent. And that's one of the things, is seed money that program. But parents should be looking for this within a year or so. They can begin to apply for scholarships. And as the demand goes up, that cap, that $25 million will go up. And we need to grow the program.
The Show Me Institute is following this educational trend. So how can people learn all about it and keep up to date, Susan?
So showmeinstitute.org, we have a lot of resources. We also have a podcast that you can listen to. I've done several on this program. And we have a website with resources. We have some reports. And, of course, my contact information is there. And anyone is welcome to get a hold of me if they have specific questions. And we're always following this. And we're continually updating the content that we make available on these types of programs.
And that's showmeinstitute.org. Dr. Susan Pendergrass has been my guest on Encounter today. She's the Director of Research and Education Policy at Show Me Institute. Look for great changes in our educational system. You too, hopefully, will be able to send your son or daughter to private schools for a great education. The governor has not yet signed this House Bill 349. What should individuals do to put a little pressure on him about the importance of this bill?
Well, I know that the governor is hearing from groups that want him to veto it, and I'm hopeful that he won't veto it, but there's a chance that he also won't sign it and it'll just go into law. So if he does sign it, then great. All of the things and the opportunities I've talked about will be available to parents. If not, I would just encourage parents who are interested in this program to also reach out and encourage the governor to sign it.
Thanks for joining me, Susan.
Thank you.
And thank you all for tuning in today.
Encounter is you and the issues, where the facts and opinions make you an informed citizen of St. Louis. Thank you for your participation. Let a friend know about this talk and issues feature of Bot Radio Network and KSIV. Then join us next time for Encounter.